Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Howdy, hour number two. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, coming live from the Quicken Loans studio. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans applies simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently on this Monday. The All-Star break, obviously, upon us. Home Run Derby tonight. We'll sprinkle in some stuff on that later. Cal Ripken going to stop by in about 35 minutes. Hall of Famer. And get his thoughts on where Machado's going to go. Not if Machado's going to go, where Machado's going to go. And talk some baseball in general with Cal. It's also the Open Championship this week. You know, so it's kind of, it seems like it's quiet, obviously.
You're right. Sneaks up on you.
It always sneaks up on you, man. Sneaks up, buddy. Tiger, 10:21 Eastern on Thursday. He's paired up with Russell Knox and Hideki Matsuyama. Last time we saw Carnoustie, it was just a sight of golfing carnage as Jean Vandeveld somehow.
But awesome carnage. Awesome carnage.
Yes, theatrical carnage for
you
sure.
You know why it's okay? Because he didn't like fall into reclusion. Or think about Bill Buckner. Bill Buckner, who is obviously famous for the 86 gaffe at first base, ball goes between his legs, and Mets end up winning game six. And
terrific hitter, by the
way. Unbelievable.
Sad.
Really, such a good player.
Yep.
And actually a good guy, too, from everything you hear. But he just disappeared.
He moved from Massachusetts.
That's what I mean. It forever shaped his life.
Yeah.
Where it felt like, just in watching this documentary that we talked about last year that Rich Lerner did, who he had on as well, you can find the interview with him, which is interesting because it talks about how Vandeveld just kind of grew away from it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It defines him to us, but not to him.
No, he's okay with it.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, if first of all, if that doesn't happen, well, I mean, if he wins, he'd be a footnote historically in golf. You know, he'd be a golf footnote.
Right. We wouldn't remember him.
We wouldn't. You know, and I didn't even remember that Paul Laurie won that. I didn't know that he held out for the sand on 18,
right.
That's for sure.
But it was interesting how Rich Lerner, who we had on and we talked about it, he said we had already written all of our stories as this is the most unmemorable major in the history of the world, being won by one of the most unmemorable golfers on tour.
Yeah.
In Vandeveld.
Scores were terrible.
Horrible.
Were terrible.
What did he say? A couple rounds, the guys didn't break 80.
Yeah, he said it was actually a pretty high. I want to say something like 20-something percent.
Yeah.
It was around 20% had an 80 at least once.
Wow.
Over if they played two rounds and didn't make the cut, or one of the four rounds if they did make the cut. But obviously we'll start to ratchet that up. A lot of people think it's Tiger's best chance to win a major this year. He usually plays well. At the Open Championship, historically, he's just, you know, teed up that little two-iron stinger, bangs it in the fairway, uses that deft short touch to get it going. We'll see.
He hits that one straight and long, so that's all you got to worry about out there half the time.
That's right. And by the way, you know, we're going to get into the football stuff here, specifically Le'Veon Bell. Did you see LeBron James' shorts this weekend? What is he doing?
I have no idea.
What is he doing?
No, it makes no sense, right? I understand that you want to promote your Lakerdom. But do you have to have the Lakers right across your crotch? It was ridiculous.
It was an odd one.
It looked ridiculous. No, and he always has his glasses on. He's, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I wasn't down with that.
Yeah, it's one thing, you know, all right, we know you're going to make it overly dramatic. Let me walk into the arena, even though the game's already started, so everybody can see me sit to my, you know, my courtside seat beneath the basket. That's fine. That's just LeBron being LeBron. Those shorts were whack. I don't know how else to say it.
If they were cool, it'd be one thing. But they were like, no one is wearing those.
Nah.
Like you can't replicate that and be like, I'm cool now. You know what I mean?
It's a weird look.
You look more of an idiot than he did.
That's true. Weird look. All right, Le'Veon Bell. All right, you called it. You're right. Mm-hmm. I asked you before the show started. We had about an hour or so before we actually got the word what you thought would happen with Bell.
Just too far away. They were just too far away, money-wise.
Your instincts were right. Mm-hmm. He did not get what he wanted, so he's going to be franchised again, as will DeMarcus Lawrence and Joyner and Ansi as well. Those are the three others here. Sticking to Bell, because he just put out, or Schefter just put out a tweet. I guess Schefter. Mike, can you encapsulate what something about that Bell's agent told Schefter? Do you have that for us?
It is incredible, but this is from Bell's agent to Adam Schefter. His intention was to retire as a Steeler, but now that there is no deal, the reality is this is likely Le'Veon's last season as a Steeler.
Okay. I know your style of business is different than Bell, and you were never in this position with the Giants.
I never wanted to go anywhere, and I wasn't at the height when I was available. When
at
I was
20, yeah, 26.
Yeah.
But if you were, okay, knowing the real finite amount of hits that running backs have before it's over. Look at DeMarco Murray. What would you do if you're Le'Veon Bell? How would you handle this season coming up?
It's so hard because, one, if I'm the Steelers and this is what his agent and I guess by extension Le'Veon are saying about his time, his tenure with the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm going to say, all right, we're going to use you up then.
Yeah, I'm going to run you into the ground.
You're right. You're going to get 450 touches this season. You know, we're going to chuck it to you 100 times, and you're going to carry the ball 350, 60 times. Of course, if that's what you want, then that's what we're going to do. Now, they can do that. The question is, what does Le'Veon Bell do?
From
the player's side, it's hard not to say, well, I'm just going to go out there and prove it, right? I'm going to prove to you why I'm worth this much. But the issue with that, and this
by
is
by the
not,
way, he's done that three times already.
Exactly.
I mean, again, think we know how good he is.
That's my point, BT. If I'm being honest with myself, like. I'm telling myself, you know what? Screw them. I'm going to go out there and prove it. I'm going to go out there and bust my butt. I'm going to go out there and work as hard as I can. I'm going to be a pro bowler again, an all pro, lead the league and rush in and have 80 catches and touchdown, all these other things. But if you really stop that machismo for a second and look in the recesses of your brain and the realization that, wait, I've done this already, as BT just
85
said.
85 catches last year.
85 catches 85. For running
on
back.
On 106 targets, I think it was.
Exactly.
Incredible.
It's almost an 80% catch rate, which is about 30% higher than the average.
It's over 80% catch rate. 85 on 106.
You're right. But I'm saying the average in the NFL, it's 30% higher than everybody else in the league. They're 30 percentage points higher, I should say, than the average. Most wide receivers are around 57, 58%. And so here's Le'Veon Bell as a baller, and he knows they're not going to pay him. He knows that they don't value this position at the number that he's contemplating. The question is who's right? And that's not for me or him. It's for the market to lay out.
I think he's right.
I think he's too.
I think he's right.
But he can't get it until the market says he's right.
But can't I
and,
hear
and,
you?
And the problem is there's one of him right now.
But that's why he should dictate that the market changes.
But he can't
because he's so good.
But the market is based on multiple guys in the similar position demanding this is the number.
There's always an exception, and that guy's the exception.
I would say so. But
does it all.
But, you know, Todd Gurley.
He's better than Gurley.
I know that. But Todd Gurley and David Johnson and some of these other really great hybrid running backs, and there's not a ton of them, but they're not free right now.
Yep.
And so there's no market for it. So it's a terrible situation for him to be in because it feels like what should have been a partnership for life, like for career, not for life, but for career. The Steelers fans love him. I think his teammates, love having him there because he's great for the organization. But the number, they'll never come to a consensus on the number because of what he believes he's worth and what I agree with that he's worth and what the running back position says he's worth, which is significantly less.
You know what's never going to happen? Well, I shouldn't say never. What would be incredibly interesting, and I would love to see who the pioneer could be to tackle this challenge. The next mega superstar from college, which is a guy who is a possible, the next Barkley, Saquon Barkley. You know, you have a chance to get certainly draft the top five. Yeah. If certain things go right, you can go two or three, as he did, he went two. If I'm that running back, I'm telling teams I'm not playing running back in the NFL, provided I can catch the ball
That's interesting.
With the deftness of a Bell
yeah,
or
yeah.
you or others. I'm not playing running back.
You want to be classified. I want to be classified as a wide receiver.
Draft me as a wide receiver, because the day that I show up to your facility, I'm not playing running back. I'm not playing running back.
That's interesting.
Because I'm going to lose $75 million, roughly, if I do.
You're joking, but you're so right.
I would love to see somebody hit the reset on the entire market. Like, be that brazen. If you're good enough. If you're truly good enough.
Well, and there's a few of them that are.
Be
right?
that pioneer.
And I've tried to position this as it's a completely different position, right? It's not the running back that mom and dad knew, you know, that was going to get 25 carries between the tackles and go for 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And maybe every now and then you're going to pop one out of there, right? This is a guy who is a coordinator, an offensive coordinator you absolutely love, because – you know what? We put two tight ends who happen to be just as athletic as wide receivers and a running back on the field. We're essentially going five wide, and we can go five wide. And now you as a defense are stretched and stressed to try to cover everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if you screw around and put, you know, your one linebacker that's on the field now, let's put the linebacker on the running back.
Yeah, good luck. Wheel route touchdown.
Right? He goes, runs real right. he's mismatched.
Peace.
And so he's not a running back in the traditional sense. He's not a receiver in the traditional sense. He's a hybrid. Mm-hmm. And that's all he's asking for. Let's get creative. Pay me like a hybrid. And, you know, I don't want to be making eight like every other running back, $8 million, that is, like every other running back in the league. I don't necessarily need to be making 17, 18 like wide receivers. Let's meet somewhere in the middle, 15
mm-hmm.
or so,
mm-hmm.
right? And the Steelers, because they're the only one that's stuck in this situation right now. If there were three other teams that had the same debate going on, it'd be different. They're the only one that's stuck, and they're not going to set the market. I can understand why they say, all right, we're only going to pay you 12 or we're going to pay you 13 or whatever it is, because we don't believe that running backs deserve that percentage of the cap. And as we've seen in other teams, you guys are just a dime a dozen. We can go get another one. James Conner's there. We drafted him last year. There's somebody else going to come along, right? We'll find a guy, you know, that's gonna fill that role. Maybe two guys. We'll find a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as good as you, but we'll find a guy.
We'll get 80% of the production,
exactly,
for 55% of the price,
exactly.
But this
and it's unfair.
It's totally unfair. This is why you and I fundamentally disagreed on what the Giants should do at number two.
Mm-hmm.
That's why whether it's Saquon Barkley and the Giants or whomever at number two or three or four or maybe even five. How can I, you know, look myself in the mirror? If I'm going to be, like, philosophically, if I'm a team and I'm married to this economic model that I am not paying a running back, no matter how transcendent, like Bell he is, he ain't getting that kind of money.
Yeah.
He's always going to be pigeonholed as a running back. How can I then justify taking a guy at number two, especially when there's multiple quarterbacks and you have it specific to the Giants and you have an older, aging quarterback in Eli who's 37, going to be 38. How do I take a running back at number two, not want to pay him when his first year, when his rookie contract is up? To me, it makes no sense. It's a contradiction.
No.
Here's
the difference. And I got to look this up right now because I don't know off the top of my head what the cap number is for the number two pick in the National Football League. Trubisky was the second pick last year, and I can't remember
off
what his
trade.
Deal was.
Yep, he went
it's
second.
It's about $5 million, $5.5 million,
okay,
per year. So it's think it out over 4 years. So it's like a $20 million deal. So you're getting and taking a running back,
mm-hmm.
a transcendent player, mm-hmm. a guy who you're going to put on par. At least in my mind, I'm putting on par with the Le'Veon Bells, the David Johnsons, the Todd Gurley, who was the offensive player of the year in the NFL last year. I'm getting that guy for 5 years, 4 years. Actually, it's really 5 years because you draft a kid in the first round, you get a fifth-year option.
Sure.
He has no choice.
Sure.
He's staying with you.
Yep.
So you basically get 5 years, $30-something million, which is like $6, $7 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking that 100% of the time, every time.
Even if there's a guy who can give you 80% of that and you have him for a decade?
He's not going to be a transcendent player. He's not going to sell. He's not going to lead the NFL in jersey sales.
What does that do for the Giants on Sunday in terms of selling jerseys?
It does a lot for their bottom line.
Well, it doesn't help with their record.
No.
I
think he will help with the record, though.
So do I. And he's an incredibly gifted young man.
If you can take that guy who's got a $5.5 million cap hit, who's going to give you production similar to the guy who's asking for 15?
Yep.
I mean,
I could take Bradley Chubb and get a guy who's going to get 15 sacks for a decade.
True.
I mean, I'm saying is it was a debate,
but they don't
had to be had inside that war room.
I guarantee you they did. But okay. They didn't need a DN. At least they didn't think they did.
No, you know what I'm saying. Or, I mean, maybe, and not maybe, just the
maybe
Giants.
They
any
did.
Team.
Maybe they did. I mean, but
I think they probably do. if Chubb is what we think he's going to be at number five.
They took the kid, Carter? What was his name? They took a DN in the third round, and who knows?
Yeah, after they took the kid from UTEP.
Which
that,
I love.
He's a nasty. He's a nasty street fighter, that guy.
Yeah,
Giants needed somebody like
they
that.
They did take a DN, though, right? I think they did.
If it was, it was in round three or beyond.
Yeah. So, I mean, they addressed the needs similarly, but not explosively like they did with the running back, which was an enormous need, as we all know.
Just something to think about. I know we got to get a break here, but I guess the challenge, and maybe you can succinctly answer this, the challenge for Bell would be, I would think, to preserve his body this year without coming across as a me guy in the ultimate team sport.
Which is hard to do, and not only an ultimate team sport, but also a position that you get cracked a lot.
Uh-huh.
A lot.
He's never going to say, I don't want the rock.
Right. He's never going to say, I'm not going to take the hit. So
does he hold out the first couple of weeks? So at least when he gets back, the carries are prorated rather than 16 games. It's like 13 games.
You know what? If I'm Le'Veon Bell, I would hold out.
I would take
those whatever number of carries off of my body and preserve them for the next season.
And you mean not hold out just symbolically for games?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would be drastic, but I can't say I disagree with you. All right, T, coming up, Terrell Owens. He's doing all this just to be a good guy. Didn't you hear the story? He's a martyr. He's a football martyr. We'll get to that coming up. Cal Ripken after that. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Teek. So we hear that Amazon is up at its Prime membership right now, and the fee from $99 to $119 for free shipping. That's a 20% hike. Pretty nuts, huh?
Yeah, that is not cheap at all, especially when Walmart offers free two-day shipping with no membership fee. That's obviously a significantly better deal.
Awesome deal. A better deal and a better way to make some more money. How about this? Another $119 in your pocket. Another $119 in your back pocket. Teak, what would you do with $119?
You know, I think I need like a new system for my kids' room. I'm going to go find Walmart's one of these stereo systems for my girls.
I like it.
They need one.
I like it. Speaking of girls, Kinsley's birthday is coming up this Sunday, and guess which guy, that would be me, is going to get dressed up as the demigod Maui. So I'm going by. That's going to be an ugly sight, by the way. Me is Maui. Not pretty.
That'd be awesome,
but,
though.
Yeah, I guess awesome if you're everybody but me, and I see the picture circulating everywhere. So anyway, I go to Walmart. I get all the Maui stuff, everything for free.
That's smart, man. Here's the deal for everybody else that's listening out there. What would you rather do with $119? Well, while you're thinking about it, go check out WalmartFreeShipping.com for a chance to instantly win a $119 Walmart gift card.
And also, Teak, if you do that, you register for the $1,119 grand prize drawing. That's WalmartFreeShipping.com for complete rules and details. 2 business day shipping minimum. $35 order. Restrictions do apply. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio here. Time now for Doing More, brought to you by the Home Depot. The next generation of home improvement. Everything you need to do projects smarter. It's the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. We take a look at somebody who's doing a whole lot for his team. How about Twins second baseman Brian Dozier? I think he could get dealt. We talk so much about Machado, obviously, you know, an A-plus player. Dozier's the second baseman with real legitimate home run power. Wouldn't be surprised if he's traded. But he did have 5 ribbies yesterday at a walk-off granny as the Minnesota Twins won 11-7 over the D-Rays. And Dozier, 14 RBI in his last 10 games. He's a good player. He's been a source of power at second base now for at least 5 years, maybe even 6. Tiki and Tierney on a Monday. All right, so Terrell Owens, we know by now he's not going to show up at Canton. It's okay. He's going to do his own thing at his college.
Mm-hmm.
In Tennessee,
Chattanooga,
Gerald Wilkins, number 21. And, he's drawn some criticism for this. I don't really care one way or the other. It doesn't like personally move me with anger or to defend him.
I agree. I hear you.
I'm kind of neutral here.
Yep.
But the one thing that's a little annoying is that now he's trying to make himself out as a martyr.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you want to be unique and separate yourself a little bit, you're a little bit pissed off because you had to wait. Okay. But now he's making it seem like he's taking this step for all those who were so unfairly, you know, their hands were just put up. Nope, you're not ready for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Come on, T.O.
Yeah, you know, he's talking about Jerry Kramer. That's the one name that keeps getting thrown out. He had to wait so long before he finally got in. And, you know, because of that, because the process is so screwed up, I'm not going to attend. Now, it's interesting because it's kind of working, right? The fact that he's not attending is drawing light to the process. I know we know Pete Prisco, who is our own CBS insider here.
Love him.
He's awesome, and he's opinionated, mm-hmm. and he makes a lot of sense when he talks about this. And basically what he says, and he's right to an extent, that you shouldn't have to lobby other people, and it shouldn't be regional voting blocks, and it shouldn't be, hey, if you get my guy in this year, I'll get your guy in a couple of years. That's what goes on, and it's shady. It's behind the scenes. Nobody knows the process, but for just a rudimentary explanation for those who don't know how the Hall of Fame voting works in the NFL, you have to have somebody that lobbies for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a political campaign to lobby
which means it's
other
crooked.
People. Which means ultimately you're right. Yeah. And that's exactly my point. It's crooked, right? You have to have somebody lobby for you. Get up in a room and argue, this is why Terrell Owens deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Because he did this, 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 and this, and this, and this, and this. And people will shout you down and say, yeah, but he didn't want to be. Nobody wanted him. Right? When we first had Clark Judge on, when we first started discussing T.O. 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Well, I remember that interview very well. Yeah. You and I were like, what? He's going to have to wait how long?
You're right. We're making him first ballot walkthrough like Brett Favre. Mm-hmm. Right? Brett Favre's, they don't need to have a conversation about Brett Favre. He's a Hall of Famer. Terrell Owens is number three all time in touchdown, number two in receiving. We don't need to have a conversation. And Clark Judge says, no, wait. Hold on. Don't think that. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? So the fact that it's gotten political with stupid narratives that have to be discussed and talked about. What did the dude do on the field? Right. That's what should have come down. It has nothing to do with the emotional frailties or the emotional, opinions of GMs and executives and others who said, I didn't like the guy. I didn't even call him by his name. So that means he's not a Hall of Famer. It didn't make any sense. Right. And so, in some ways, what T.O. is doing is bringing light to that, the fact that it is nonsensical, the fact that half of these voters wait for someone to inform them on why a player should or should not be in the Hall of Fame, when in fact they should be doing that research themselves. And if you don't have the desire to do it, you shouldn't be a Hall of Fame voter, right? I get it. I get it from both sides, to be perfectly honest with you, and it's frustrating for a lot of these guys who never get in the conversation or who are unfairly judged in the conversation instead of based on what they did on the football field.
Yeah, we had T.O. in studio a month and a half ago,
yeah.
roughly.
Yeah,
I certainly respect his decision.
Mm-hmm.
A little mystified, but at the end of the day, I do respect it. But I think he's going to regret it. I really do. I think he's going to, when he's older, and he's just going to regret that moment. I mean, yeah, he's gonna feel the love at his, mm-hmm. at his college campus, no question, and the adulation, rightfully so. I just think he's gonna really lament deleting himself from a moment that you only get one chance at.
Yeah, you're right.
You really, that's it.
You're right.
That's it. You get one chance.
And if he really wanted to be controversial, then he should have said all of that. Instead of his speech being, I want to thank this person, this person, this person, he should have used that soapbox,
yeah,
to say this is why this process is wrong.
Much bigger stage than Tennessee Chattanooga, with all due respect to the school. If he was to do that in Canton, if he said that. Part of the problem with the NFL, the benchmarks are somewhat nebulous.
Very.
You know.
That's a great point.
Yeah, it's like, what? Okay, and the other problem with T.O., as great as he was when he was on, he was on.
Mm-hmm.
But he really does have, of all the superstars, all the megastars, he's got one of the stranger, complicated histories. I mean, he's completely disenfranchised from the 49ers organization.
There is no team that he associates
with. No connection. Yeah. I mean, he told us, Jed York, I mean, he's got no affiliation with the Niners, which is odd when you spend the first, I think, 8 or 9 years with one team,
mm-hmm.
and we're so good with them. He was great with Philly, played there 2 years.
You're right.
He was great with Dallas, played there 3 years. And that's kind of like playing 3 years for the Yankees or the Celtics. Hard to carve out a meaningful name with that, like a legacy.
Yep.
With those kind of franchises when you're there for 3 years.
Yeah.
Because there's so many great players that have been there for 10, 12, or 13.
Yeah, right. You're not climbing their individual record books.
No. I mean, give you an example. Say if Machado winds up with the Yankees here. And say if they, which I don't think he's, I think he's going to go to Milwaukee or Philly or maybe a dark horse. I don't think he's going to wind up with the Yankees. I don't think the Yankees need him. But if he goes to the Yankees, right? and he's a free agent at the end of this year. Say if he agrees to this mega deal, and there's an opt-out that he gets into his contract after 2 years with his new team, and say if that new team is the Yankees, and he opts out, be 3 years with the Yankees, or 2.5 years with the Yankees. How? No, even if he hits 50 bombs next season and wins the MVP, how do you jump over Ruth, Garrett, Mantle, DiMaggio, Barrett, Jeter? You just don't.
Unless you win two World Series.
And how does...
And you're like the MVP of the World Series.
Precisely. And specific to T.O., how does T.O. jump over Michael Irvin with all those championships?
No chance.
He doesn't.
No chance.
How does he jump over Jerry Rice? Nobody jumps over Jerry Rice.
No.
But even in the pantheon of minor greats, Montana, Ronnie Lott, you know, Coach Walsh, you don't.
Yeah.
You don't.
You weren't that long
enough. So I'm perplexed at the road he's taking, the route. But fundamentally, I can't say that he's wrong.
Yeah.
Because he really had to wait an unfair amount for what he did on the football field.
I agreed.
Strange legacy.
And so many others, similar production, all-decade players, we've talked about this many times, are also not in the Hall of Fame. So it's a process that it's interesting because the other thing that Pete Prisco will talk about is how they only let five guys in. And there's 22 players on the field at any given time.
Think about how long it took Ray Guy to get in.
Yeah.
It's a position.
I know.
It's a punter.
And that's not even one of the 22 that you talk about.
That's true.
Right?
That's
true. 22 players plus the specialist.
Yeah.
And so you're only going to let five guys in a year? It just doesn't make any sense.
I hear you. Now, we're pretty tight with Tim Brown. We've had Tim in studio many times over the years, even when we were doing different time spots.
Yeah.
He always comes on with us at the Super Bowl. Tim Brown, to your point about all-decade team, right? Second team wideout for the all-decade of the 90s. Heisman Trophy winner. All right, you want to say separate from the NFL, that's fine. Was a great receiver, an exciting return man, and, you know, led the NFL with receptions in 97. He had over 100. 9 career Pro Bowls during the decade. Now, I'm not saying that Tim Brown was as explosive or as much of a game wrecker as T.O., because he wasn't.
No.
More of a possession guy, hung around a long time, got the numbers maybe, stayed an extra 2 or 3 years too long. But Tim Brown, you know, was deserving 10 years ago, 5 years ago for sure.
Yeah.
10 years ago.
Yeah.
He had to wait a long time.
Really long time.
I mean,
it took a lobbying effort.
Right here on Tiki and Tierney. We had to get him in.
Not only us. You know, obviously
we
us.
Led the way.
Yeah, we led the way. But he legit had a PR firm lobbying for him.
Which is sad.
But think about that.
I know.
That's what you had to resort to.
You should never have to beg.
You should never have to do that.
And he was unfairly put in a spot. Beg is not the right word. But, you know, I say that just to hammer home the point. Strange, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to watch T.O. I'm going to watch his speech from campus. I really want to see where he goes with
it. I do, too.
Maybe we'll get him on before that. We've had him on, as I said, about a month or so ago, maybe a month and a half in studio. Maybe we'll get him back. We know his PR firm well. All right, Cal Ripken Jr. is up next. Number one, where is Machado going to go? Because we know he's going to be dealt. And not that it really matters necessarily for Oriole fans, but what could they have done to make this, you know, where did the Orioles, I don't know if he'll be truthful because he's got a connection to the Orioles.
Yeah.
But if he's going to keep it real, like when did the Orioles really mess up and just lose the chance to lock up one of the best players in baseball? And of course, we'll talk about the All-Star game and all that stuff. Cal Ripken Jr. is next. Jay Berman's update is right now. Okay, Tiki and Tierney back on a Monday. Derby tonight, game tomorrow, always fun. Little respite from the real action, second half around the corner. And a lot of second-half storylines, which we'll get into with the great Cal Ripken coming up in a moment. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227. Brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Quick way to save money. Switch to GEICO. Just go to geico.com and in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. One of the legends, one of the sporting legends of, I mean, just the guy transcends everything. I mean, durability, production, class, grace. That is the amazing Cal Ripken, 19-time All-Star, 2007 Hall of Fame inductee. The Iron Man, talking a little shop with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Cal, how are you? Welcome to the show. What's going on?
I'm doing really great. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Doing well. You know what's funny? It's when we have football players on the show, like we get some of the retirees at the Super Bowl, they'll come in onto our set. And I'll always say, whether it's off air or on, you know, how's the body feeling?
Yeah.
We don't really ask Cal Ripken how the body's feeling. Maybe we should. How are you feeling physically? I know you play hoops. I know you keep yourself in good shape. All those innings without a rest. How do you feel right now?
No, I stopped playing basketball about 5 years ago.
Okay.
So. The back was bothering me. The knee was bothering me. And I just thought it was time to do something like riding a bike that was a little less stressful. But the body, I just finished playing a round of golf. And so that's always a good test. You swing in my game. You swing the club about 100 times.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, you sound like us. We should get together.
And the body feels a little achy, but you do realize I'll be 58 this summer. So
Wow,
it's a little different than when you were 25.
Gotcha.
Yeah, no, you don't feel that old. I feel like you were just playing. Maybe because you played so long. It's interesting though when you think about how athletes, you know, transition out of sports and get into other things. And I always wonder, Cal, and for a guy who did it so long and so iconically for one franchise, which is with the Baltimore Orioles, if you had to leave, would that have been hard for you?
You know, I almost had to face the reality of leaving. I had a father that got a chance to be the manager, and our team wasn't very good. Hmm. And he was fired after a year and six games into the next season. And I was a free agent at the end of that year, so I thought the Orioles weren't the Orioles that I knew, and that I'd have to look for another place to play. And that was the most unsettling, three quarters of a year for me, because I was involved in trade rumors, and I kept thinking, you know, I want to control that. I don't want to come to the ballpark one day and have them call me in the office and said you've been traded to New York or Boston. And so I hung in there, and I finally got the chance to sign a contract, and it was important to get a no trade for that. So when I look at the Orioles now, you got Manny Machado, that there's constant rumors about him being traded and the value of trying to get something back. It's got to be an uncertain time for him, and it's got to be a really uncertain time for the whole team.
Do you think that the mentality that you were just talking about, how it affected you and you wanted to be there and you wanted to be able to control it, do you think the younger kids, especially maybe it's because of the money, do you think they think about that as much, the loyalty to the team that they came up with?
Well, you know, I always placed a value in it wasn't all about the bottom line dollar. It was about choice and where you wanted to play, where you wanted to raise your family, where you wanted to live. And I think those factors were, you know, very important to me. So maybe in contract negotiations, you negotiate early, you leave a little money on the table. But I think those sort of decisions, I placed a good money value on being able to decide. And maybe now, you know, a lot of agents want to get the highest dollar because, you know, that's their reputation for breaking the bank. But I still think there's a case to be made that you should look at your life and look at the choices in your life and gain some control of those and maybe give up some money in the process.
Mm. You don't hear that too often these days. Good stuff. Cal Ripken, 21 years, couple of MVPs, 19-time All-Star Hall of Famer, talking shop with us here on Tiki and Tierney. All right, let's get back to Machado. To me, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I mean, he's going to get traded. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no doubt about that, unless you would challenge that. I'd love to hear it. But what I want to really know, Cal, you know, what was the breaking, like, what could the Orioles have done differently? Because, I mean, if I'm an Orioles fan now, I know the team's bad. They're going to be bad for a while. I understand rebuilding, getting a lot of prospects for Machado. But you get a player that good, that great, and you trade him eventually. You know, how does that happen?
Yeah, sometimes it's inevitable that the player just wants to go someplace else and play, or they want to test their value in the free agent market and, again, break the ceiling for whatever reason. I think, though, when you do develop a player like that and you got him really young out of high school and he was good pretty quickly, moved through the system very fast, got to the big leagues, broke in, and was a pretty much a star right away, you do want to figure out how you can extend, you know, control over him, how you can he's sort of a lifetime player that you and you have to make decisions early and kind of get him into the mix early. If you wait on long-term contracts, if you make him go to arbitration, if you do other things, you know, as a club, you're kind of challenging him to find out his worth. So he ideally is a player you want hold on to. Even in a rebuilding process, you could rebuild around him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what happened along the process.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what's going to happen, you know, whether, you know, they trade him and get prospects back. It seems like that's inevitable at this point. But he's a player that still everybody wants. And if you have him, I'd want to keep him.
Yeah, no doubt. Cal, let me ask you this. If the Yankees or the Red Sox put the best offer on the table, for obvious reasons, I mean, it would kill the Orioles to make the trade because you'd have to face them basically 20 times a year and maybe watch them win championships and all that stuff. But would you, if you were running the Orioles and truly the best deal was from the Yankees or the Red Sox, would you make the deal and suck it up in the short term to accelerate the rebuild? Or would you try to reroute him as far away as you can from Camden Yards?
No, I think I'm of the opinion you get the best possible deal. And whoever that, because you should worry about building your team and putting your team together and not worrying about how he's going to come back and haunt you. So if the best prospect deal, you know, came from someone within your division, I think you should take the best possible deal. Get the best prospects for your own sake and have your own timetable to win and not worry about what's happening on the other teams, because knowing if you put together a good team, you'll be competitive.
I would agree with that, too.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
I think you're right. Cal, do you think there's other shoes you're going to fall, I guess is the best way to put it, in the locker room? Who else could potentially be headed out if this is a true rebuild from the Orioles' standpoint?
Well, I think the funny part about a rebuild is, and some people forget, it's not just changing out your better players and trying to get younger players. I think it's also trying to align your younger players to all come along together. Because if you're going to build something, I think back to in my time, the Yankees, when the Yankees started to develop within, and they had a core group of people that came up at the same time, they were able to evolve and develop at the same time, and then they really could win together, play together, and had something. So I think when you do go through a rebuilding process, everybody seems to be on different times, so they could be a free agent or different contractual times. You'd like to get everybody in the same alignment so that if you have control of a young player for 6 years, that they're all in the same timetable that you can develop them. So I think alignment of those players, and it's not just trying to get the best for your star players. It's actually looking at the big picture and saying, okay, if we're really starting over, we need to get a good group of young players that can develop at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Cal Ripken, of course, Hall of Famer, the great Cal Ripken with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Cal, I come sometimes head down 95 to see my mom in Laurel, Maryland, and we stop at a rest area. I always go get Roy Rogers. I know that you guys are partnering, or you are partnering with Roy Rogers to celebrate their 50th anniversary. Tell us a little bit about what you guys have going on.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Is that I've always been very careful, you know, with my associations or partnerships or endorsements, and it has to make sense for me. And when I started talking to Roy Rogers, and they're a brand that is rejuvenating, I remember when I was a kid, it was a special treat to go out to Roy Rogers. We lived a nomadic life in the minor leagues. My dad was in the minor leagues, so when we traveled, Roy Rogers was our stop, so it had some meaning to me. And then throw on the top of that, you start talking to them, and they have the same sort of values that you have, and there's an opportunity to also raise money for the Caribbean Senior Foundation. You know, it seemed like an easy decision to make. So they are celebrating the 50th anniversary of existence. They are growing now as a franchise and as a brand. There's 53 stores, mostly in the Mid-Atlantic, but they have a nice growth plan. And I'm happy to be a part of it, to get them some attention and partner with them and also work together to raise money for the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. So it's quite a partnership. And I'm heading to a store right now where they'll probably put me to work behind the and I'll find out what kind of skills I have. But it's been a great association for Roy Rogers, and it's been a great association for me. And I look forward to continuing that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there's nothing, I mean, this, what a flashback. There's nothing like being in the backseat of your dad's car or your buddy's dad's car after a doubleheader or a weekend-long tournament, and you stop over. And I know the restaurant. I know going down to the Naval Academy. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about, getting yourself some fast food and, you know, big dreams of the big leagues. That's good stuff, Cal. Let me ask you this. Got about a minute left. You're taking any direction you want. I would imagine it's somewhat favorable, but I'd love to get your thoughts on. We'd love to get it. General direction of the game, whether it's the pace of play, the neighborhood rule at second base, you know, the lag, just the game's trying to change, and I think it's evolving for the most part in a good direction. What do you see, Cal?
I would agree, generally speaking, that it's good to take a look at some of those factors. I thought the catcher's rule after Buster Posey got hit was a good rule. The object is to score a run, not to kill the catcher. and many times you get people coming around third base with their sole objective is to take out the catcher.
Mm-hmm.
I had some mixed feelings on the double play at second base. You know, I think sliding in aggressively and trying to upend the second baseman to really break up a double play is a good baseball play. And so I think in some ways that took a little while for everybody to get used to. And having gone into a second baseman or shortstop 1,000 times and having had them come into me 2,000 times, I know what it feels like on both sides of that. But I think everybody's grasping the rule pretty well. You know, talking about outlawing the shift, I think, is not very good an idea. I think people should be able to play anywhere they want on the field.
Yeah.
Some of the saber metrics, you know, might have gone overboard, but I think it's self-correcting after they start to figure out, you know, how well it works or how well it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I would agree with you. In many ways.
Hit the ball the other way, right? That's the way to go, right?
We're thinking about the game and in the right ways, and we're not afraid of change.
Yep. That's a good thing. Cal the Iron Man, Cal Ripken. Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cal.
Cal Ripken. Hey, it's a little second-half preview coming up next. Tiki and Tierney.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.